Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello, Podalters. I hope you're well. I am coming to you from the slopes, and I wanted to tell you about this week's episode because it is with the lovely Shelley Syme. I came across Shelley after she commented this poem under a post that I did for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. She wrote, "My boobs feel different to how they used to. Having a mastectomy at 29 isn't something I thought I'd go through. They used to be something I loved about myself. They felt perfectly imperfect, like my wonky smile and mouth. They were small but perky and not a C but an A. It was easy to feel differences, and I was lucky, some would say. But some days I don't feel lucky. I've been through trouble and strife. Not two boobs, but one. They feel like a saved life." Afterwards, I started following her and her page, and as she put it in a message to me, she just wants to live life to the full and spread awareness. So here we are. Shelley is very open and candid about her experiences, and I'm really grateful to her for sharing so generously. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. As always, please do rate, review, and subscribe. Happy listening. Bye.
Hello. Today I'm joined by Shelley Syme.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me. Me and Shelley have actually never met before, but the way that we met online was I did an ad for Copperfield, and one of the things, the parts of the campaign was for people to comment how they felt about their breasts. And Shelley wrote underneath this amazing poem about having had a mastectomy at 29. So then I obviously went to stalk her because I thought this poem was amazing. And your Instagram was so inspiring and cool. And I was like, I just have to speak to you. So I guess with that, could you tell us a bit about you and about your journey and what happened with that? Because you're so young to have gone through something so traumatizing and huge.
Yeah. So basically I was diagnosed, well, I found a lump under my armpit when I was, I think it was like August, I just turned 29. And then I went to the doctors and they sent me to the breast clinic and then they said, oh, everything's normal, like don't worry about it. And then the lump just got like bigger and bigger and bigger. So I went back in May of the next year, had an ultrasound and then went back to the breast clinic. And then they did like, I had like 9 biopsies, so in like 3 different areas. And I was like, okay, this doesn't seem like it's nothing anymore. And then I went back into the room and she basically was just like, we can't say 100%, but like, you need to like prepare yourself for the worst. And I was like, oh my God. And just in that moment, I was just a bit like, okay. But like, you still have like a little bit of like hope. She was like, oh, you know, you don't know until the results come back. So I was like, okay, great. There's still a bit of hope that it's absolutely nothing, even though like, it was definitely something. So I went back like a week later and then they diagnosed me in, yeah, August. So like almost a year later after I'd found the lump it was. Wow. So yeah, in August they diagnosed me with hormone positive breast cancer in my left breast. And it was also in the lymph nodes as well. So it was really quickly, like straight away, you need to have chemotherapy, you need to have surgery, you need to have radiotherapy, you need to have hormone therapy. And I had no idea about cancer or like the different types of cancer. Like I knew breast cancer was a thing, but like I didn't know that there was like so many different types you could have. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe it'd be fine. Like maybe I'll just need a bit of surgery and like Bob's your uncle, let's just carry on with life. But then they just like named treatment after treatment. And I was like, oh my God. But I was so calm in that moment. It was so weird. Like my parents were with me and like they were both crying and I was just like so calm and like, okay, yeah, it's fine. Everything's fine. And then it was like the next day that it really hit me and I just like cried like nonstop. It was difficult time.
I can't even imagine how you react in that situation. And you know, when you're saying like there's a bit of hope, I always feel like it's flipped. It's almost like when you know nothing's really wrong, like rationally, you kind of work yourself up into a panic and you're, yeah, like, oh my God, it must be something awful. And then weirdly, I do think you get that thing where it kicks in and you're just, when something terrible does happen, you're suddenly like just very calm and can, yeah, take it in. But what point were you in your life? So you're 29, were you working? Like at what point did this happen to you and how did it materially change? Like what was your immediate kind of life changes that happened straight after, obviously you're having to have all these treatments?
So I was in a bit of a weird position because I'd just finished my master's and the pandemic had hit like halfway through my master's. So that had like sort of changed my timeline anyway. So I had to move back home with my parents and I was working full time, but it was like a maternity cover. So it was like a temporary job. And then I was diagnosed in the August and I was supposed to finish my job in the September. So basically I like carried on working for like that extra month because in my mind I was like, it's fine, it'll be in like a nice distraction. But then I was having chemotherapy like whilst trying to be at work as well, and it was like really, really overwhelming. But like I managed to get through the month, and then I just had to stop working for like an entire year basically. My oncologist was like, yeah, we recommend that you just don't do anything basically. And because I had this temporary job, like it would have been like a little bit better if I'd have had like a permanent job because I would have had time off, they would have paid me sick pay. But because I literally had like nothing then, because I had to just leave the job, not get a new job, so it was like a whole year of like doing absolutely nothing and then trying to like get your life like back on track. Yeah.
And how, like, statistically, because to me 29 seems just so young, like is that unusual or is that...
It's super unusual. So like you don't start having mammograms until I think you're 50. Yeah. I think it's like less than 4% of people get it under 30 or under 40 or something like that. So it's super, super rare. So that's why when I first found the lump, they were the second time when I went back and they were like, we didn't like catch it the first time because your age is such like a... You know, they didn't really factor in because they were like, you're so young, like it's probably nothing, it's probably nothing. So yeah, it's super, super rare.
And were you checking? I'm much better at doing it now ever since I've done that campaign, but like, were you checking or was it just
noticeable? I think it was just like, I was laying in bed and I think I just had like a bit of a scratch. So I like itched myself and I was like, oh, okay, like this, I don't think this is usually there, but like you don't know because I wasn't checking, and like no one teaches you like how to check or what to do or how often you should be doing it. That's sort of information that you have to like look up yourself. So I like found this lump and I was actually going into the doctor's for a smear test, and I just mentioned it to the nurse and I was like, I've got this lump, can you have a feel? So she like felt it and booked me an appointment with the doctor for the same day. So that day it was like smear test, like breast exam. It's a real heavy day. So yeah, I wasn't really checking. I was just like, I just found it, which is really weird. But like most cancers are like self-diagnosed anyway.
What, and so what was that year like? You got home and you cried and you found out, and then how did that transpire? Like you're going through those treatments, I just can't even imagine mentally like what that must be like. And it feels like a terrible question to ask, but what was your prognosis? Like, did they say to you?
Yeah, like, so I didn't really ask what my prognosis was, but yeah, they kept on saying stuff like, do you want to freeze your eggs? Because, you know, in the future you might want to have kids and, you know, the chemotherapy makes you infertile. But I didn't want to have kids. It was never in my like plan basically. So I was like, I don't want to have an unnecessary procedure, like I'm just going to crack on. And so in my mind I was like, well, that's enough for them to be like, oh, you know, if in the future if you want kids. I was thinking, oh, they're talking about the future, so like it's you know, it's fine. But afterwards I knew it was at least stage two because my lymph nodes were involved. I hadn't really looked much into it, and it's difficult to diagnose further than that because cancer only shows up on scans if it's like a certain size. Right. So I didn't know how many lymph nodes were infected or like how big the initial lump was, because they don't tell you really unless you ask. And I didn't ask, but you get like letters through the post, and it said on the letter that my lump was quite big. I think I had two different lumps basically, and I think a total size of like 8 centimeters, which is actually really big. So it was stage three and grade three, which is like the most aggressive type get. And that's why everything happened like so quickly. And like I Googled, which is like really not what you're supposed to do at all. But like everybody Googles when they get like illnesses, the prognosis for like stage three cancer. And it's like 75% like 5-year survival. So like 75% of women will survive like past 5 years. Right. So like if you catch it straight away, if you have like stage one, it's like 98%. If you have stage two, right, it's like 90. So it goes down like quite quickly when you get to stage three. But I didn't really know I was stage three until I had my surgery and they like removed the lymph nodes, and it was like I think I had like 5 out of like the 18 that they removed were involved. So yeah, stage three, grade three, 75%, 5-year survival. But young people have like worse prognoses because it's usually more aggressive. And because you usually catch it later because you're not really looking and you're not having scans or anything. So it was quite a lot to deal with, just sort of, it's such a weird thing, like knowing that there's like a genuine chance that you could like die because of this. it's like something that you never really get over.
I was going to say, how do you feel talking about it? Like, do you feel okay talking about this?
Yeah, I have like good days and bad days. Like some days it like gets me really, really emotional, but some days it's fine. And I think because like it's been quite a long time now, well, not a long time, but it was a year last August since my first diagnosis. So it's been like a year and a half now since I was first diagnosed. At the beginning, I hated talking about it. I really didn't want to talk about it. I think I like deleted social media. Like I didn't want to like look at anyone else's life. But I've actually gotten quite good at like talking about it now, because just because I think it's such an important topic and for people to, you know, become aware of, I feel okay talking about it. And I think because I've said it so many times as well, like to different people that I meet and like, you know, everyone who wants to know the story, I have to tell it over and over again. So it's sort of become like a second nature now.
I guess you have more ownership over a bit once you've told it enough times. It's like you control the story rather than it being something so emotional over you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
What was that year like for you coping wise? I mean, obviously you're going through all of these treatments, which I can't even imagine like how difficult they are physically and mentally, but sort of, did you have therapy? Like what were your did you have like a strategy of sort of like mentally dealing with this as well as physically going through all of these things?
I didn't really have a strategy, but like I did have therapy. So the NHS was so great. They literally like, they gave me extra. So you get like therapy with, someone calls you up and says like, how are you doing? And I'm on the phone like going, yeah, I'm okay. Yeah, I'm doing really well. And then like all of a sudden you burst into tears and they're like, yeah, you're not doing well. So they offered me like therapy via the NHS, and it happened like really quickly. Actually, they were really good. And I had like 10, I originally had 10 sessions, but then because my treatment went on longer than originally planned, because I had to have 3 surgeries rather than 1, they gave me an extra 2 sessions. So I had like 12 sessions of therapy, like CBT therapy through the NHS. And then once that finished, I left it for like a little while, but then it sort of like progressively got like, my mental health like just got worse and worse and worse. Like particularly like recently, like when I've started, when I finished treatment, finishing for me was like the hardest part, because you're expected to just like drop back into normal life, and you've had this like major thing that's happened to you, and you've not been working for a year and this, that and the next, you've had all of these treatments, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, like great, that was your last session, like bye, like let us know if you have any problems. And so like I've had to go back to private therapy now, so like it's expensive, but like I love therapy. Like I think it's so great. Like I'd really advocate for therapy, and it's definitely helping me out a lot. So I didn't really necessarily have a strategy. I just had lots and lots of therapy, which it was really great.
It's really nice to hear that it was like so supportive and so quick on the NHS.
Yeah, it really was. Like that, and because when they called me and I was like, yeah, no, I'm fine, like I'm doing really well, and they like instantly knew like, no, you like, you really should consider this therapy, like we really think you should go to therapy. So it was really nice of them not to just be like, okay, she said she's doing fine, so like let's just leave it. Like they were really good at like being like, you really need this support. So
obviously, I know you mentioned this in your poem that you wrote to me, and you just said you had like multiple surgeries, but I know that one of them was a mastectomy.
Yeah.
How does that change the way that you feel about yourself and your body? And like, was there was no option in that had to happen, kind of thing?
It had to happen. So like my first surgery was like a lumpectomy, where they basically just like removed the lump, and then the results came back and they didn't get clear margins, so they still found cancer, and like they want to get like a millimeter at least of clear margins, and they didn't get that. So then they had to go back in and take a little bit more, and they still didn't get clear margins. So they were like, we can't just keep chipping away at it, like we're gonna just have to remove the whole breast. And I was like, oh my god, okay, like this wasn't in the original plan. But it took me a while after the surgery to really like look at myself properly. Like after I had my first surgery, I was like, I want to see what it looks like, because it still looked like a normal boob, and I was like, this looks great, like I'm actually really pleased with this, like I just had a scar. And then like when I had the mastectomy, I was like, no, but it looks so good, like this is so sad. And yeah, it took me a while after the mastectomy to like have a look at what it looked like. I was like, I don't even want to see it, like I'm really scared. And I don't know what I was expecting. You can't really, like, it is one of those things that like you don't know how you're going to react until like it happens to you. And I think my first thought was like, oh, it's not too bad, like it's fine. But like the more you sort of look in the mirror, or like the more you wear clothes, like during the summer I wanted to wear like tight tops, or like, and you can't, because like you're so, I mean you can, but like you're so lopsided, like, and a lot of the stuff I was wearing, like it was so obvious. So it's like really like put a bit of a like downer on my like self-esteem, basically. Like I've got like low self-esteem now. Like I really like, I was quite body confident before. Like I actually really liked my boobs. Like I think they were a great size. Like they looked really good. So now it's a bit like, it was just such a shame for them to go. And because I'm so young, like I don't have a boyfriend. So like dating is such a minefield, because it's like, when do you bring it up? Yeah. Like, you know, are they going to be like weird about it? Am I going to be weird about it? Because it's such like, it's one thing for me to like look and like touch my chest, but it's another for like someone else to be doing it as well. So like, it really like hinders like the way you look at dating and stuff like that. Like my body is just so completely different now. Like I don't know how I would feel if someone else were to look at it. Like nobody else has seen it apart from me and like the doctors obviously, but like no like friends or like family. Like I keep myself like quite covered up. I'll wear like baggy clothes a lot more often now as well, and like I do have like prosthetic boobs, but like I really hate wearing bras.
Yeah.
I never wore bras before. Like I just hate them. So it's just really changed the way I like look at myself and the way I look towards like the future as well of like dating and stuff like
yeah.
that.
That's, I feel like that's a really honest answer, because I think like a lot of the time, and it's really positive, people talk about things and we kind of talk about it and we re-narrativize it to be like, it's our strength and, you know,
yeah.
but it can take a really long time to become proud of scars or like yeah, things that definitely. Make you feel really different. And I think it's really, it makes me really sad, because I'm like, oh, I hate that you feel that way. But yeah. then I think like, God, I can't imagine. It just must feel so strange, like yeah. literally and physically. You were talking about love then, and I think that's like a really interesting part of, because I kind of wanted to ask you, like, coming out of the other side of this, I guess, if you feel like, do you feel like you're out the other side in a way, or you're still so deeply in it?
Sort of. Like, it's a bit weird, because like all my treatment's finished, so like I am out the other side in a way, but like I'm on still on like so much medication, like the journey is still ongoing. But like in terms of active treatment, like yeah, definitely, like I am out the other side.
And what, I mean, it's going to be with you forever in so many different ways, but does it make you view life differently? Has it made you look at things in a better or worse way? And like, do you feel more scared or more free? I can't imagine what it must change.
I think I do feel like a little bit more free. I mean, I definitely worry less about like the little things, like, you know, spending money on something. I'm a bit like, yeah. For example, I just went to the snooker last weekend because I really love snooker.
Yeah.
I really love it. And like before I would have been like, oh no, like those tickets are way too expensive. But now I'm like, no, yeah, I'm going to buy tickets to the Masters and see the snooker. Like I actually like, I'm more inclined to like do fun stuff that costs money, because I'm a bit like, life is short. Like it's so cliche to say, but like life is short, and like when something happens like that, it's like I just want to experience everything that I can experience. So I do feel definitely more free in terms of like stuff that I want to do and stuff that I like maybe wouldn't have done before, because you've just got to like enjoy life like whilst you can, because you really have no idea like what's going to come around the corner.
I want to ask you about snooker.
Yeah,
how did you get into snooker? I don't know anyone that likes snooker. Sorry,
really?
I actually think it's quite cool now. I kind of want to be into snooker.
Honestly, it's so tense. Like you literally, you watch it and you're like, oh my God, it seems like such a boring thing to watch. And like a lot of people do think it's boring, but like I've gotten my whole family into it because it was the Masters last week, and I was like, it's been on my TV like nonstop.
What made you get into it?
So basically I was at, when I was at uni in Bristol, I lived in a house with three guys, and it was just on TV one night, and like they were watching it, and I think it must have been like during lockdown, because they were like, oh, you know, there's nothing else on. And I was like, oh fine, like we'll watch a snooker, whatever. And they were like teaching me all of the rules and like telling me what was going on, and I was just like really, really getting into it. And then when I left uni, like every time the snooker was on, I would just put it on the TV, and I was just like absolutely loving it. And I like messaged my friends being like, are you watching the snooker? And they'd be like, no, like they just weren't as into it. And like I was just super, that's super so invested in the snooker.
So what, you went last weekend? Was it amazing?
Yeah, it was honestly so good. I went to Ali Pali to watch the Masters. Judd Trump, who's my absolute favorite.
I nodded like I knew that was, yeah, then, and then I was, yeah, like, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's my favorite, and he was in the semi-final. He actually won the whole thing. So
ah.
It was honestly such a great day. I was like a little kid at Christmas. You're just like really
so
laughing
sweet.
Life.
I wish, I don't have any sport that I like, and I actually am like, I'm going to have to learn to watch sport, because I think it's a really important thing.
You should watch the snooker.
Sorry for that diversion. I guess I want to go. Going back to like coming out the other side and relationships and all of those types of things, What does it make you, you're saying like a life is short and you want to do all the experiences, but does it also make you change like how you view the people that come into your life? Was it made you like, what going forward, like is are you thinking about love? Is that something you want to pursue?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've never been one for like, I'm not like a traditional person. Like I would like to get married eventually, but I'm not like a, I want to get married and, you know, buy a house and have kids. And like, obviously eventually I would like to, you know, move out. I'm 30 years old and I still live with my parents. So
I think that's okay.
I think it's fine. But it's just not what society tells you is fine. But yeah, I definitely want to look for love, but like it's so difficult because like I don't go out that much. So basically I'm on Hinge and I mean I'm on Hinge and I deleted Hinge, now I'm back on Hinge. But the first time I was on Hinge, I put like on my profile, one of my prompts was like, oh, one thing that you should know about me is like I only have one boob. Because I was like, when do you put something like that out there? Like when does it come up in conversation? Because like you could be chatting, it's like, oh, so what we've been doing the past year, and it's like, oh well actually like I had cancer and then I had a mastectomy and this and the next, and it's a bit like, whoa, okay, yeah. Like catches them off guard. So, and also like I don't want that to be like a discussion that I have like first date, you know what yeah. I mean? So like I'd rather just get it out in the open and like cull people who that's a problem for.
I think that's a great like, way to do it. Yeah. To put it on. I think that's really funny as well.
So like you'd get like funny responses and some people would be like a bit weird about it and I'd be like, okay, absolutely not. Some people were like, oh yeah, I really want to see it. And I was like, ew, no, like, yeah, you're great, okay. Weird. But most guys actually are really nice about it. But it's one thing like saying, by the way, I've only got one boob. And another thing like having like an intimate relationship with someone where like they're going to see what it looks like. And I just don't know if I'm like quite there yet. So like I would love to get into a relationship and, you know, I wanna have like a boyfriend and I wanna be in love. But like it's such a like transition for me at the moment. And it's just about finding like the right guy who's gonna like accept that like I'm gonna have to take things like a lot slower than maybe I would have done in the past. Like it's gonna have to be like such a gradual thing for me at the moment because I'm just not quite ready to like put it out there into the world just yet. It's difficult. And like, it's one thing showing it in like, on my Instagram, I know I have like shown like my mastectomy and stuff, but it's so different doing that and like just pressing like send on like share on Instagram to like actually having someone in real life like look at your body. And it just like honestly just like terrifies me at the moment.
No, I was gonna say your Instagram's absolutely beautiful, but I completely agree. I post videos of me in my underwear all the time. If you two came in and I was in my underwear, I'd be like terrified. You know, yeah. It's so weird. It's like, oh, it's right. Only 100,000 people are gonna exactly. see it, but then us in private. I'm like, no. it is weird, but I would hope that most people would understand. But I completely understand why for you it must be almost like you've, in a way, it must have felt like you're losing control of your body because this thing is happening and then it's like getting to know yourself again. It must completely, has it, obviously you're saying it's made you more self-conscious in sort of like a physical way, but has it given you like, I guess not respect for your body, but has it made you less insecure in other ways? You know, where sometimes we focus so much on our bodies that it becomes our identity. Has it kind of made you feel like I'm more than that?
It has, yeah. Because when your body goes through such a major change, you are sort of like grateful for it in a way. And it's like my body like can do so much, and like it's, you know, the whole treatment and how I like handled it and how my body handled it, like it is like absolutely crazy. So like you do sort of think like I am so much more than what I look like and what my body is like. But there is the other side of it where it's like what you look like is such a major part of life. And like with like social media and stuff, like it just highlights the fact that like now my body is like so different to everybody else who's like my age. So it's like, it is like a bit of both. Like some days I'm like, this is great, like my body is so great. And other days I'm like, I really wish that my body was like normal. I just want to like look like the people that I like look at every day.
Would you like think about reconstructive stuff, or is that not something?
Yes, it's weird because like when they first told me about mastectomy, I said like, well, what about reconstruction? Because you can have reconstruction like immediately after mastectomy, but they basically were just like, no, we want you to like heal as quickly as you can. And because I do have quite like a high risk of the cancer returning, it's harder to like feel for changes if you've had like reconstruction. Right. So it would be an option for me in like a few years time, maybe like 5 years time, or, you know, once the oncologist sort of gives me the all clear and says like, you know, you can go for this if you want to. But I just don't know how I would feel about it at that point. Because like, in a way, like I'm really getting used to just having one boob, and like, it's quite like an identifying thing. Like, this is my identity now. Like, I've had a mastectomy. Like, this is my body, like it or lump it sort of thing. And do I really want to put my body through more surgery that isn't necessary? Because like, if I have reconstruction, it's still not going to look the same. Like, it won't, you know, it won't feel like a regular boob, and like, I won't have a nipple. Like, so it will still be like completely different. And like, do I want to go through having to like transition into loving that new body when I've spent so long trying to love like the body that I have at the moment? So it's like a really difficult decision, like, which I didn't think it would be. Like, I really thought like, I definitely want reconstruction because I don't want to be lopsided. Like, I want to have two boobs. But now I'm like, actually, I don't know that I do. Like, it's such a weird decision to have to make.
And it's obviously it's your body and what you've been through. Like, I just can't, it's would be remiss of me even to comment, but like the pictures when you post them on Instagram are just beautiful. Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, it is so, it's so easy to say that as someone that isn't you. And I can imagine that going through it, maybe will take a while, but I'm sure they'll come to a point when you will feel comfortable. And we were speaking about this bit before because we were talking about your tattoos, I love them. And you're saying how you can't get tattoos on your left arm now. And I know, and we'll talk about why, but I know that you can get, I've seen, it's amazing. People do like nipple tattoos, don't they? But could you not have that as well because of the...
I think I probably could because other people have had them. So it's not like I'm the first person. So yeah, I think the nipple tattoos look incredible.
Yeah,
like,
some of them are amazing.
Talented, the people that do that. So if I had reconstruction, like, I probably would get one of those tattoos just because they look so good and so realistic. Yeah. But I'd have to check with my oncologist because I don't know. I mean, I have to leave my left side, but like the left chest because of the, I mean, I'll explain why I can't have it on my left side. So like, basically I had my lymph nodes removed, all of my lymph nodes in my left armpit removed, which means I'm at risk of this thing called lymphedema, which is where like if you, the whole left arm will like swell up, and it's incurable as well. So like, it will never like go down to like its normal size. And that's like a big thing that like you obviously just don't want to happen. It can be really like debilitating. So I can't have anything. I can't, you know, can't injure my left side. Like, I have to be like super, super careful of what I do with my left side now. But I think there are like other lymph nodes in your chest that go up to like your neck and stuff. So it just depends on like where the lymph nodes are and whether like that would be an option for me. But I feel like it would be because I've seen them, like so many people get them. So like, I don't see why not.
I'm like obsessed with watching the videos of them being done because they are like incredible. I can't believe
how... So the people that do them are so talented. So like, I don't understand how they do it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So you said briefly before when they were talking about like freezing your eggs that you never necessarily wanted to have children anyway. What's your like a timelines imagine? What actually, I'm just interested in what we were talking about children briefly before. And I don't think it was on the podcast, but I was saying how I never when I was younger realised that there was an option not to.
Yeah.
Because you just think as like a cis woman, that's like what's going to happen. And then when I realised that I then was like, oh my God, do I want them? And I'm still a bit like, it might not happen, but it might, but I'm not like... that 100% sure. But you are like, you don't want them.
I've been sure for like quite a long time. But I mean, obviously when I was little, like I was like you, like, you know, I'm gonna grow up and I'm gonna have kids and this is what their name's gonna be, and like picked out the names and stuff. Because like as like a young girl, you are like taught that, you know, you go through life, then you get married and you have kids, and that is just sort of your life is like planned out for you. Then you get older and you realize actually like, no, like that, you know, I have choices. And I don't know when it was that I decided, but like I've never really been very maternal. Both my sisters have kids, so I have four nieces and a nephew, so it's for me like that's enough. And like, I love my nieces and my nephew, and but I just love like giving them back as well. And I've just never been maternal. That's just never really been in my life plan. And I don't really know why, or there was never like a pivotal moment where I decided like, I definitely don't want kids.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely don't want kids. I just enjoy like being independent and like in like a selfish way, I guess. Like, having a kid like really, really changes your life. And I like, you know, not that I do a lot now, but like I like the fact that I can be like spontaneous and do things that like other people can't do that do have kids. So yeah, kids have never really been in my plan. But it is different when like the choice like is no longer your own, because like now with the chemotherapy and stuff, it can make you infertile. So being like having the choice and saying like, I don't want kids is so different to them being told like, oh, actually, like you might not be able to. And you're a bit like, oh, but, well, did I want them? Like you sort of like question it. But like, I definitely didn't want kids. But it is such a weird feeling to be told like, you can't have kids.
Yeah. And it did. And did that moment for a split second where you're like, oh, shit, I need to.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because like, even though like I knew in my mind that I didn't want to have kids, like it is such a weird like moment of, oh my god, like this decision is no longer my own. Like was I sure I didn't want kids? Like, and it's annoying because I used to get so annoyed at people who would be like, oh, are you sure though, like you're so young, like you'll change your mind. And I'd be like so angry at people, like I'm not gonna change my mind, like I'm not that young, like I don't want kids, like why is it that like I have to have kids? Yeah. And I'd get so frustrated. But then when they told me like, you probably won't be able to have kids, I was a bit like, well, was I sure? And then I was annoyed at myself.
It's so weird that people go like, are you sure, when not having children is the like easier option.
Yeah.
In so many ways. Like having children, like you said, is ultimately so life-changing. It's yeah. so difficult. It'll turn your world upside down. So it's so strange that we're like, no, you have to do it. Because yeah. it's like, surely that shouldn't be something that we're like encouraging people when they're not, when they don't like want to have kids. Also, I've started romanticizing so much this idea of being like the really rich auntie who's really fun.
Yeah.
Who like takes the kids on really amazing weekends. And even though I do like the idea of having children, I also then I'm like, oh my god, it actually be amazing to be like in your 50s childless with a partner.
Exactly.
And just like traveling and like going out for amazing dinners. And I'm like, I've really started to see where the like, there's so much joy and fun and amazingness to be had from being childless.
Yeah.
Rather than everyone like kind of saying it's this like, oh, she hasn't had kids. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's so weird. And also I've kind of gone the other way where I think about that so much. And I listen to way too many parenting podcasts that have made me stressed. And I'm like, I can't do this. It sounds too, because I think everyone's gone to start being really honest about parenting, haven't they?
Yes.
But like so honest that I'm like, well, this sounds like this a sounds terrible horrific. Idea. Like, yeah. Why would anyone do it? What's your, so you were telling me about your work a bit before. So you work and you do like copywriting and stuff for an invite. Can you explain it again? Because I'm going to butcher it.
Yeah. So I do like, I'm a creative comms officer for a company that works with like sustainable fisheries and marine conservation charities. And I do like a lot of copywriting for them. I do like a lot of social media for them, some like design stuff as well. So like it's a really like varied role. It's like quite creative. It's really great.
And has your experience, has it changed kind of like what you seek from work or like how you view work? And I can imagine like having that time off, going through such a life-changing, like devastating experience, does it make you think, actually, this is something that I need for my work? Or were you really excited to go back and have a sense of normalcy?
Yeah, so like, I mean, beforehand, before the whole cancer thing, I really envisioned myself like, because I did wildlife health and conservation at university, and I really envisioned myself doing like marine conservation, because my master's was supposed to be, I was supposed to go to Australia and work with sharks in Australia, and it was wow. going to be amazing. But the pandemic hit and I couldn't go to Australia, so that like proper threw me off course. And then obviously like having cancer and having all this treatment and having like ongoing treatment as well means I can't really do that anymore. I can't really go abroad, I can't live abroad. Like, so working in the field was a bit, it completely changed like what I could do for work really, and what I have the energy for as well, because like I get really like lethargic and really tired really quickly. So I had to like change my, like completely change what I wanted from work. But I always knew that I wanted to work in like conservation or sustainability or like something like that. So like when this job came up, it was really like I sort of like jumped at the chance, and I was really, really excited to get back to like a bit of normality, like have a routine again. And I like just couldn't wait to do it. But then like, so I was working like full time 9 to 5:30 Monday to Friday, but then I like couldn't keep up with it, basically. It's so weird, like, coming from, like, you think, are so excited to get back to normality and be like, okay, treatment's over, like, this is so great, I'm gonna get a job and I'm gonna move out and everything's gonna be amazing, and like, but having like a normal life isn't like my reality anymore. So it was really difficult, like, the transition from like recovering from treatment to then going into a full-time position, and I was getting really tired and like my work was like really struggling. So I had to like talk to my boss and be like, look, I can't like, I've recognized that like I'm really struggling with work at the moment. So like, luckily they let me go part-time, which was like super nice of them, because it was just like, yeah, it's such a strange thing to just be so excited about like going back to normality, and then all of a sudden you're like, you hit like this brick wall and it's like, oh wow, like normal doesn't really exist for me anymore.
So what are your ongoing treatments, and like, is the reason you can't travel abroad because you need to be like accessible to your hospital and stuff, or is it because it's too fatiguing, or what's the...
So I'm on quite a lot of medication. So I'm on like chemotherapy tablets at the moment, and I'm on like hormone treatment. So basically I'm in the menopause, so they cut off all of your estrogen because my cancer was like hormone positive, estrogen positive, so like cut off like your estrogen supply to like your whole body to like stop the cancer from like feeding on the estrogen, like growing back. So I have to have like an injection every 3 months that like puts me into the menopause and stops my estrogen. And I'm also on like all these different tablets that do like different things. Like I'm on chemotherapy tablets. I have to have like blood tests like every so often, like every month or every 3 months now. I have to have blood tests just to check that like everything's okay. And also like going abroad is like really difficult in terms of like insurance. Like if I wanted to go for like if I wanted to go for like a really long period of time, it'd be so expensive in terms of insurance, because I have to declare that I have cancer, and like if I need treatment whilst I'm there, it'll be so expensive. So it's just, there's just a lot of things that are like, yeah, a lot of barriers that are like in the way.
And how like, oh God, I can't even, like the, you're so like positive and amazing, and it's like it's just mind-blowing. I feel really naive because I don't really understand, like you, I kind of think breast cancer, you either like you have it or you don't, and when you have it, it's either kind of fixed or it's not. But yeah, it's so much more complicated than that.
Yeah.
And like, what does the, how do the chemotherapy tablets, they're obviously not as aggressive as when you go into the hospital and have it, but
no,
they must still really impact your day-to-day life.
Yeah, so the worst thing for me is like the tiredness. Like I just get so tired so quickly. That's probably like the worst side effect. Like they're so mild compared to like actual chemotherapy, because obviously I lost all of my hair during chemotherapy, and you don't lose your hair on these. Because that was the first question I was like, am I going to lose my hair again? Because like, I really don't want to. So you don't lose your hair. It's just like tiredness and like sickness. I'm on like anti-sickness tablets as well to go with the chemotherapy tablets. And it causes, well, sometimes it causes like diarrhea. Like I don't know whether I'm coming or going sometimes. Like either like half the medication I'm on makes me constipated, half the medication makes me have diarrhea. And it's like, oh my God, like just give me a break.
That is terrible.
It really is.
We haven't even talked about like hair loss as well. I mean, yeah, that must have been, how did you find that? Like that's, I feel like such a big...
That was like the first thing I think that made me cry, was when the oncologist was like, you're going to lose your hair. But then she was like, oh, but it doesn't matter because you have such a lovely face.
And I was that just is like, true. You've got a really good face.
Thank yeah. you. But you don't know. Like, cause I was like, am I going to like get rid of my hair and I'm going to have like such a weird shaped head? Like, you just don't know until you get rid of your hair, like what you're going to look like. And like, luckily, like, you know, not blowing my own trumpet or anything, but like, I actually think I looked like fairly good with like no hair. But I like shaved my hair off because I was like, I don't want chemotherapy to like take my hair. So it was just like one weekend, I think I'd had like one session of chemotherapy, and I was like, right, like this is it, like this is the weekend, like we're gonna do it. And like, I was actually fine. It was my mum, because I made my mum do it, and like I didn't really think like what it was gonna be like for her, but like she got really upset and she's like, I don't know if I want to do it. And I was like, mum, you have to do it, like I need to get rid of my hair. So like, I like shaved my head before like chemotherapy like took my hair, because I was like, I didn't want
to
like wake up in the morning and I have like clumps of hair on like my pillow, or like in the shower like comes out in clumps, and it's like, no, I just don't want that to happen. But that for me was like, that was like the pivotal moment, because before that you could sort of pretend that like, oh, I don't have cancer, like I'm not ill, it's fine. As soon as you lose your hair, it's like, I look ill now, like I look like I have cancer. So like, that was like a weird thing for me.
You do look a bit like Iris Law, who I'm obsessed with. Do you follow her?
No, who's that?
Oh my God. Jude Law and Sadie Frost's daughter. She's a model. She's unreal. And she's cut her hair like really, she's about your length now, but she did it really short pixie cut. And you have like similar bone structure.
Oh, great.
So you're and also I'm loving the blonde. You've just done that, haven't you?
I have. Yeah, I was like dark before, but I was blonde before chemotherapy, and then it came back like really dark,
interesting,
really curly as well, because I used to have like quite straight like blonde hair. It's so much darker now and so much more curly, so then I was like, look, I'm just, you know, blondes have more fun.
Yeah,
I
love this look.
So I just went and got it dyed.
What, so you mentioned, I haven't really even asked about your family, but like, what, how was that like being with them? I mean, it's like, it must be, I can't even imagine for mum, maybe it's not even like a nice question to ask, but it just, that must have been wild.
Yeah, I mean, they were obviously like beside themselves, and it was such a horrible moment, like watching them like get really upset was just really horrible. And but I was like so blessed really that I was living with them, because I don't think I would have been able to do it by myself. Like, they took me to like my hospital appointments, they like waited around for me like for like all these scans and all my treatments, they like cooked me dinners, like they literally did everything for me. So like, it was so good that I was at home, but it was really difficult to watch them, because it's not just like me, obviously I'm the one that's physically going through it, but like, it's not just me that it impacts, you know what I mean? So it's really difficult to like watch people that you love like having to go through this with you. Like, it's such a weird like feeling.
I can't even imagine. Does it make you feel weirdly like younger in a funny way? You know how as you got older, especially like I feel this, but like when you're coming towards 30, you can get this really weird sense of like, oh my God, like I'm turning into this different kind of woman and people of the world's going to see me differently. Did it make you at all feel like, no, actually I've got so much to give and so much life to live, and like make you feel younger in a funny way? If that's a really younger? Stupid question, like, no, that's a really dumb question.
I don't know if it made me feel younger, because I feel like such an old woman at the moment, because like I'm going through the menopause and stuff. I do feel like super old rather than like feeling like a really young like 30, because 30 is really
so young.
But I never really viewed 30 as like young. Maybe it has made me feel younger actually, because I never really viewed 30 as being young until I like turned 30 and then this happened and I was like, actually, like I am still so
young.
That's
what I mean. I think we're taught that like our lives end at like, as a woman, yeah, it's like, go stay inside now because you're 30. Do you know what I mean? And then I guess it, because it does make you view life so like, like you said, it's so quick that 30 is like the beginning of the journey, really.
It actually massively is, yeah. And like now I feel like now I've gone through this at 29, it's a bit like, what else can you really throw at me now? So like 30, it does feel like my life is like beginning again now.
what is it like going through the menopause?
It's horrific.
Sorry, I feel like every question I ask you, I actually feel like bad asking.
No,
it, because I just feel like, God,
fine.
This is so like stressful, and you're just like so brilliant. And so if there's anything I ask you, you're just like, actually pissed off. I don't want to answer that. Just tell me. But it is like, I think it's really interesting, and that like, I had no idea the like lengths that, and like you say, I think if it was like a 6-year-old woman this was happening to, if they got like the menopause was enforced upon them, you kind of, it wouldn't feel as jarring, because you'd be like, yeah, oh well, that's like sped that up a bit. But for you, obviously this wouldn't have been,
yeah, like for all. Most people that get breast cancer, obviously like they're old enough that they already have gone through, yeah, the menopause, so they don't have to have like the same sort of like treatment or like, you know, side effects that I have to have. At like going through the menopause at the age of 29 is like just absolutely crazy, because, and it's not just about like, you know, you think of menopause and you think of like the hot flashes, and like I get a lot of those, don't get me wrong, like they're horrible, especially during the winter. And I feel bad for my parents as well, because I'm there like having such a hot flush and it's like I have to open the window and everyone else is there like freezing cold. But yeah, it's not just that, it's like, you know, it's the hot flashes, it's the fatigue, like it's everything else that comes with the menopause that you don't ever really get taught about. And it's like the achy bones, like the achy joints, like not being able to do like the same sort of exercise that like you would as a normal 30-year-old. So it's just like, it is just a really horrible thing to go through. And like you feel, you know, you feel faint, you feel sick, like sometimes like it'll just be like a random time of the day and you're like, oh my God, like I've got to sit down, like I've got to have this glass of water, I've got to take off every single layer of my clothing. Like it's just like, it really impacts like your day-to-day life.
I could imagine. I guess it's kind of like having an invisible disability, being on all,
yeah,
of these. Like, how do you think the world is set up for that? Because I often, I guess, as it made you realize like how it's so much more difficult to move through the world if you aren't completely able-bodied? And have you noticed, yeah, that there's loads of barriers, or has it been quite smooth sailing on that front, or not really?
It's, for me, it's because I am still able-bodied, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not really like changed anything in that respect. It's just, for me, it's like just the fatigue and, you know, I can't really like drive like super long distances anymore because I get so tired. And I didn't really think about that before. So it's not impacted me that much in terms of like being able-bodied. I can still do like everything I could do before. It's just the tiredness and like having to have naps during the day and like, you know, having to go part-time at work. I didn't really think that was going to affect me as it did. But like, obviously, luckily, like my work were like so good about it. But I can imagine like if I was in a different job, that wouldn't have been the case. And then that would have completely like thrown me another like barrier in terms of like having to get through life, because I don't think I would have been able to cope with full-time work. So like it has changed my perception, definitely, because it is so much harder to like just do your everyday things.
Yeah. Does it make it like, I guess I think that sometimes like we do so many things, and I always like to think back and be like, what were humans doing before we invented capitalism? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Just chilling out. And it must like, once you've had that break and you come back and obviously you do, like you are feeling tired in that way, does it make you realize like how kind of wild it is, like how much we're stuffing our days with things?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's literally like, we do so much during the day that it is crazy. Like work can be like so full on, and then like you're expected to like after work it's like, oh, I'll go out to the pub and like have a drink and I'll like see my friends. And then it's a bit like I finished work at 3 now, and it hit 3 o'clock and I'm like, right, I need to go and have a nap. Like
I saw someone tweet and they were like, guys, how are you doing life? How are you having like relationships, friendships, like, work, social life, hobbies, going to the gym, cooking for yourself, cleaning? I do think that as well. And I actually have quite an amazingly flexible job where I've got so much freedom. I cannot keep on top of keeping this flat dust free for the hell. Like,
it's so crazy. Like, I don't know how we're expected to do all those things. But like, you get up at like 6 a.m. and go to the gym, and like sometimes I look at your stories and I'm like, how on earth is she at the gym and it's like 6 a.m. and
no, I actually bed, like... I never go at 6 because it's so busy. What I actually do, it takes me so long to wake up, is I wake up at 6, I have a coffee in bed for like half an hour, nice. My brain like very slowly switches on, and then I do a bit of work. But I normally go at like 8 or 9, because if you go at 6, that's when like everybody's in the
there,
gym. So I go later. But I do like waking up early, because I feel like I like, you know, when it's, I swear I have ADHD, but when it feels like everyone else is really quiet, I can really focus. So between like 6 and 8, I quite like drafting emails or doing things, because it's like the world is asleep. But the minute it's like actual work time, my brain is like, let's run around. Yeah. Let's not do any work. Let's get straight. It's so bad. And then again, I'll start concentrating. Like if I've got a really big piece of work at like 10 p.m., my brain's like, let's do it now. As I was falling asleep last night, I've got a comedy gig tomorrow, my brain will be like, let's write the stand up right now at 11:30. And I'm like, no, go to bed. And it's like, go. And I'm like, oh my God, it's really annoying. So I just try and, but that's the thing, I'm so lucky, I can like be really flexible with things, whereas like if you're in a normal job, you just don't have that like availability to do that kind of thing. So I am really lucky. Is there anything else that we haven't like discussed about because I feel like there's so many questions that I don't even know to ask about having been through what you've been through and the way that it's impacted your timelines?
I don't know really. Like, I mean, it definitely has impacted like my entire timeline. Like I obviously was going to move, because my job's based in Bristol, and I was going to move to Bristol, and I was like super excited to move out. And then like obviously now I've had to go part-time, like I can't move out anymore. But like it's just so, it is just crazy, like the societal pressure of having to be like, you know, you're 30 years old, like you should move out, like you should have a boyfriend, you should be getting married, like you should be having children. And it's like, that just isn't real life. And like that's just like a lot of people's, you know, not real life. Like, and I think like it's just like drilled into you, and I think it takes something like this to happen, like this like major change in my life where it's like, okay, actually, like, no, like I don't need to have all of these things figured out by this point, because you actually have no idea what's going to happen. So like, it's really just, it's been a crazy journey. Yeah.
So crazy.
Yeah.
And I also think rushing to try and get everything done by 30. Do you ever look back and I think, God, I was an actual baby at 25. Like if I was making decisions for my like now self back then, even if it was like, who's going to be the right partner or whatever, it just seems like we don't know enough. Mm-hmm. I feel like the parameters are too small for like the times. I don't know. That's why I'm in this whole series. Because I'm just like, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense. And like, I think because both my sisters, they both got married, they both have houses, they both have children. And like my elder sister, she got married, I think she was 21 when she got married. And I remember, I'm 6 years younger than her, so I was like 15, and I remember thinking, oh my God, she's so old. Like, I can't wait until I'm 21 and I can get married. And then I hit 21 and I was like at uni and I was like, Oh my God, like, how did she do it? Like, I'm such a child. After going out like every night, like getting home at like 3 a.m. and like going to lectures in like my pajamas. And she was like getting married at 21. And I was like, no, like, it's so crazy. So like, yeah, like, it is mad how different people do it at different times. But like, I really felt like when you're younger, you think like 30 is so old. So old, and then you hit 30 and you're like, I'm still so young. Like, there is actually so much like life ahead. So like, you just don't need to rush into these things. No. Like,
and I almost feel like you have the sense you've got to like dampen out all the fun and silliness in you when you get to that age, because you suddenly got to be. And it's like, no, that's what life is. It's like being yourself. Yeah. But that's so interesting about your sister, because I always think about the other side. There are people, I had friends who had children when they were like 23, and they're like the most amazing mums.
Yeah,
it suits them perfectly, and they're so fine. Whereas I'm like, I can't have a baby now because I am a baby. Like, it's yeah. funny how some people are just really like suited to certain parts,
yeah.
and like how weird it can, and one of my friends, she got married and she was like, I was saying to her, look, I'd just broken up with my ex, and I was like, I just think I want a career. Like, I think I might, if I have kids, I'm gonna have them in like my late 30s, whatever. And she was like, you're really lucky, because now it's actually fine to say that. You could say that to yeah. anyone. She's like, when I turn around, I'm like, I'm getting married, I'm in my like mid to late 20s, and I want to have a baby next year. People are like, oh, that's young. And I was like, God, she's right, actually, because I do think in the last couple of years, we've kind of flipped it a bit. And then people yeah. also get stressed about that, because some people are ready way sooner.
Yeah, so no, it's I agree. Just, it is weird. It is, but it's weird funny. That they flipped it like that, and like, or 29, like, oh, you're young to be having children. But then when you hit 35, like, you're considered like a geriatric mother, I think.
It's a really it's like, small what? Window.
Such a small window. It's like, I'm too young, but now I'm too old. Yeah. Like, oh my God, I'm like, what am I supposed to do?
I know. And also, it's like the length when you see these people that had like 5 kids and you actually do the math, you're like, oh my God, you were pregnant for 5 years.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
That's like so much work. I didn't know oh my God, all the time to yeah. do. So have you got like, do you think, sorry, this is my last question, again, this might be a bit of an annoying one, how does it make you think about looking ahead? Like, has it made you more present in the moment, or do you you're just like living in the now?
I'm definitely more present in the moment, and I like to like be a bit more like spontaneous and like take myself on, like, you know, I was literally thinking like, oh, I really want to go to Paris, and it's like, I'll just take myself to Paris for the weekend, like, that'll be fine. Whereas like, I wouldn't have ever thought of doing that before. So I definitely live more in the now, because like, I'd like, for myself, like, I mean, it's morbid to say, but like, I don't know how much time I have left. Like, I don't know if the cancer's going to come back. Like, obviously, hopefully it's not. Like, hopefully I've done enough, and, you know, hopefully it stays at bay. But like, you just don't know. So like, you do have to like live in the now, and you do have to like be a bit silly, and you have to like just enjoy life as much as you can, you know, see your friends, like go out, like, and I'm saying like this, like, I go out all the time, like, I don't really, but like, I definitely do like live more in the now. Like, it's such a like, you, and it's not like you have to do that, you know what I mean? For me personally, like, I feel like I do sort of have to do it, because I don't know what's coming. It's just, yeah, and it's better for me to live in the now, because I think too far ahead, I then go into the stress of like, well, is, you know, am I going to be here that far into the future? Like, is that going to be a thing? So I'd like, do have to like think to myself, like, I have to think more in the now and like enjoy life like as it is now, because yeah, I don't know where I'm going to be in like 5-10 years time. Like, I could be back in the hospital, like, touch wood, I am still going to be here, but like, you know, there is a real chance that like I might not be here. So like, you really do have to like live in the moment.
I think that's incredible though, and I think it's like a better way to be for everyone.
Yeah,
I'm so grateful to you for coming here and talking to me. Like, you've
no,
been
thank
so
you for having me on,
but you're so kind and lovely, and I feel really a bit invasive asking all of these questions.
No,
but
it's such an important thing to like talk about, and like, you know, people, young people do need to be aware, because you don't really get taught about this stuff in school, and you know, it's not very common, but like it can happen. Like, I am proof that it happens. So yeah,
well, people can obviously follow you on your Instagram, which is Shelly J. Syme, which we'll put in the show notes. And is there anything else that you'd want to like point people towards, or anything that you wanted to share?
I mean, the main one that I would point people towards is Copperfield. Like, they do so much. I mean, you did the ad for them, didn't you? So like, they do so much for like young people. How to Glitter a Turd as well. Like, she's the founder of Copperfield.
Is that her Instagram?
Yeah, it's called How to Glitter a Turd. She's just so inspirational. So she got diagnosed. I mean, I don't really know her story, but I think she was like 25 or in her really early 20s. She was diagnosed with stage 4, so it's incurable. But she's like 13 or so years later, still living, still like loving life. So like, definitely go check out her as well. She has like points you in so many directions on how to like, you know, how to check yourself. And she obviously found in Copperfield, and that's where I get all of my information on how to like how to check myself, what you should be looking out for. So like definitely go and check out those two. Yeah,
amazing. Thank you so much, Shelley.
No, thank you for having me. It's been great.
And thank you everyone for listening. I will speak to you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.